The details behind the Diddy indictment, Taylor Swift's stalkers, Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is KJ and Lyons. KJ Carson and John Lyons right now on WEEI.
Obviously, I haven't talked much in camp, but I do kind of want to address some things. Obviously, I look at the media as a whole, and I kind of want to approach this thing as professional as possible. So I had some conversations and I had some interviews throughout camp, and some of my words were misconstrued. And, you know, kind of, I don't know, me talking to another individual, I don't know, it was kind of regurgitating in another way. So, or taken out of context. And I think I was referred to as a pain in the ass. You know, and I hate painting a posterior, but I'm going to say exactly what it really was. Obviously, I don't want to come across as that. And I'm going to say this. I want to be very clear. I'm an adult. I apologize. I'm not up here to ego trip. I'm not up here to rub anybody the wrong way or say anything for clickbait. If I rub anybody the wrong way, I really want to apologize. Moving forward, obviously, we have a media to player relationship. I'm as professional as I can be.
Ah, the boys are back together in town. KJ and Lyons, WEEI, great Saturday to you. 617-779-7937. John, that's Stephon Diggs, who finally addressed the comments Phil Perry made. And Phil Perry later would say, look, okay, maybe I went a little too far with what I was saying. And here we are on the cusp of tomorrow. Brand new player, hasn't played in the preseason, been a distraction. Best player on the team, hasn't been a distraction, not playing. Are we looking at a team that it's how good it's going to be is going to be based on, say, the distractions versus the reaction to, like, how much better are you than last year?
It's interesting, KJ, because Diggs, when he was signed, obviously there was a lot of excitement from myself included because this is the best skill player they've had probably since Julian Edelman in 2020 before he got hurt, right?
Right.
It's been a long time. And then there was the boat thing and, okay, how is this going to go here? And I was actually, I felt good after hearing what he said at the podium because it felt like he was trying to turn the page and move on to the season and be a productive member of the Patriots because, to your point, they're going to need Stephon Diggs to be productive if they're going to have a decent season. I mean, we're talking about a team that over the last couple of years has had the worst receiving group in the NFL, and you look at this year, okay, DeMario Douglas is a good player. I think Kayshon Boutte had a great training camp. Kyle Williams, there's some excitement there, but really, the big dog in that group is Stephon Diggs. He's a guy that would have had 1,000 yards last year if he doesn't get hurt in October, would have been by far the best receiver on the Patriots last year.
I think he would have had the second most receptions when his season stopped last year or something like that. I think he had 40-something receptions.
And he would have had for the whole season the second most catches for first downs on the Patriots, and he played half a year. So,
He played four games.
Yeah, to your point. So I actually looked at that in a positive light as it felt like he was trying to turn the page. I didn't view that as he was trying to be combative with Phil Perry. Great guy, Phil Perry, by the way. But I didn't look at it as him trying to be combative in that way. I actually looked at it more from the positive lens.
Okay, so I don't have an issue with Stephon Diggs with anything that's happened this preseason. I knew that he wasn't going to play preseason almost at all. I figured, like, maybe he takes 10% of the snaps during preseason.
Yeah, I thought he might get a drive against Minnesota.
I realized you probably don't play Stephon Diggs because that's the thing you're probably going to want to do the most in a game, and you don't necessarily want to show that hand in preseason, right? Like, anything that Drake May wants to do to Stephon Diggs with Stephon Diggs in preseason is really only tape I'm going to watch. That and maybe if there's a new wrinkle with Hunter Henry out there, right? But other than that, nobody's losing sleep when they're defending themselves against the Patriots receiver room. I think a little bit even with Stephon Diggs there, so you have to keep him on ice. Now, let me go back to something that happened a couple years ago and why I think this is kind of the distraction mode. You remember when Parcells, because you guys mentioned, I'm thinking, like, how do you bring up dead people in that last break? But when Belichick was let go, so were a few staff and beat writers for the Patriots. You remember this?
Yes, I actually do remember that.
Okay, so we talked about it at the time, was like, maybe there's just not a feeling as much of a story with Belichick still there. Will Belichick catch Shula? You still had the Brady versus Belichick. Could he do it without Tom? What is it looking like after 5 years? So I get it a little bit that there wasn't the storytelling. But we know how this business and this entertainment industry is. Oh, so we're going to hire more people for what? there has to be some type of news story. And you feel like there has to be, for some, a distraction to justify why the coverage of this team deserves front page. Because right now you would say out of all four teams, and you had to say who gets the front page, who gets the second page. Do the Patriots get the front page?
Maybe. I mean, like the Vrabel effect and whatnot.
For 20 years, it was like they got their own newspaper and we can give you a supplemental about the other teams that are in town. So that's how far we've come. But the reaction side is, isn't this still supposed to be a conversation about this team is more functional, coached better, better acumen, a clue, right, than what you saw last year? And now I'm feeling like, does it feel like the team is that much better than last year?
So for me, it does. And the reason I said, like, I compare it to, like, the last 2 years of training camp, right? Like, when I was down there last year at training camp, remember, there was the Matt Judon temper tantrum that Curtis just referenced in the last segment.
But that was the substitute teacher thing. And I remember when Mike talked about it, Mayo was seen as the substitute teacher.
It felt like there was an air of disorganization. And then that Philadelphia Eagles joint practice was a real eye-opener. Like, that was like JV versus varsity. And then this year, when I was down there, it felt more professional. It felt more organized. It felt like they were building towards something. They were light years better in the joint practice against Washington as well. So I do think things are in a much better place than a year ago. But as you and I have talked about before, like, this thing comes in steps. Like, being in a much better place than you were a year ago doesn't magically mean you're going to win the division, right? There's still a ways to go. Like being better doesn't equate to being great, right? Like, they're going to be better than they were a year ago. I feel better about them. They're more professional of an operation, but there's still a ways. Like, they are still relying on a guy in Diggs offensively that, whether take the boat thing out of it.
Right.
A guy that is coming off an ACL injury 10 months ago when he's over 30 years old. Like, I think he can be good, but that's still, you know, it's not like they're relying on a 26 or 27-year-old A.J. Brown, you know, like Philly does and Devonta Smith.
We're trying to develop a Marvin Harrison Jr.
Right. Exactly. Like, that's who they're relying on. And the left side of their offensive line, like, I like Will Campbell. I like Jared Wilson. That's two rookies in their first start going against Max Crosby, most likely.
Why would he even switch the side of the field?
Like, that's a lot to rely on, I think, early. So that's why I say I do, to answer your question, feel better about them, much better than I did a year ago. But I think we just got to be careful equating them being better to all of a sudden, like, oh, all right, they're great once again, and they're fine.
Yeah, KJ Lyons back with the title belts around their waist on your Saturday, 617-779-7937. Still to come, we're going to bust out Professor Lyons, right? Got Oshitake, something that's from the Sunday KJ show. So, I mean, we've been apart, but, like, still kind of in love with each other. So it's going to be a fun 4 hours. So this is why I get to this, right? So the team winning four games last year, if they win six games, is that really, I mean, yes, numerically it's an improvement, but with all the deficiencies that this team had, you might say they were lucky to win four games.
Okay, oh, they won 2.5 games last year.
Right. So,
and I'm only half joking when I say that.
No, that's true, because you're like, okay, maybe the only game they really won was at Cincinnati last year, just because Cincinnati was ill-prepared and they had all those distractions. Remember Jamar Chase and his contract situation? What were you going to do about
T. Higgins, right? And I joke and say 2.5, but, like, that Bears team they beat fired their whole coaching staff.
Right, they were a mess. Right,
like, you know what I mean. The Bills obviously tried to lose that. So, look, six would not be enough for me. I'll say that six wins would not be enough. Now, those people that are like, oh, they'll win 11 games again. Look, if they do, I'll jump up in the air and celebrate. But I think that's unrealistic. Like, I think you should be looking in the 7-9 range. And I'm at 9 personally, but I think you should be looking in the 7-9 range. 6 would not be enough for me based on what they've invested this offseason.
So let's get to the reaction portion, right? We talked about Stephon Diggs and the stuff on the boat and what was in the pink cookies bag or what have you. But the reaction is, okay, your best player is going to be out for tomorrow's game. And let's just say, because we talked about this a little bit off the air, is, hey, Brock Bowers could potentially go off tomorrow. And they were like, okay, so where's the roll-down safety that could probably handle the bigger guys? Oh, Peppers is gone.
It's funny, too, you mentioned that, because if I was them, I'd be like, all right, maybe certain situations, I'll put Gonzalez on Brock Bowers. And now you don't have that option. And to then, of course, you don't have the Peppers element of it. And that's another thing. Like I mentioned Will Campbell and Jared Wilson. They're also relying on Craig Woodson. And I like Craig Woodson. He was a good player at Cal. He's really athletic. It's a rookie in his first start, right, ever. And Jaylen Hawkins played 600 snaps at free safety last year, but no offense to him, he's never been a major part of a great defense. You can like what you see, but it's just until they prove it, I think there are fair question marks there.
So is it manage expectations still, or now, hey, let's lower the expectations a little because this is a new thing? Like, because that's part of the ethos here is like, how do you manage the expectations? So, yeah. Win 11 games, a lot of weird, strange things have to happen, and they have to happen early. To win 6 games, I'm like, okay, that's more than 4, but that's not better. That's not anything. A 6-11 team, you're going to tell me just mathematically because they're a little bit better? Like, no, you went and got people, places, and things to try and change this to at least this has to be a winning football team. So where you are at 9, I understand. Well, later into the show, we'll look at how things play out. In fact, we'll do that next break in terms of like what the schedule looks like. But I can't see how this team can go in there and lower the expectation and believe that, you know, if we're highly good and competitive and we win 7 games, we're on the way that we need to be. I'm thinking, no, we saw some of that competition from a 4-win team last year, and it was horrible.
Yeah, and if you look at, and you and I were on the air a lot last year, we suffered through it. You look at some of those
changed,
games.
Right? I'm kidding.
The way they suffered through, like, that overtime loss to Seattle, Jalen Polk not getting his foot down against Miami, like, the May interception in overtime against Tennessee, the late interception against the Rams. Like, they were close. And if you look at the last 2 years, they've lost 26 games in the last 2 years, which hurts me to say. But 14 of those 26 losses have been by one possession. So if Vrabel is as good of a coach as I think he can be, and a lot of Patriots fans do, and if May is progressing and McDaniels is as good as I've made him out to be, then they should win some of those games. Like, not all of them, but you shouldn't be losing 6 or 8 one-possession games this year. You should be able to go, you know, if you have 9 one-possession games, can you go 4-5 even in those one-possession games? Like, that's something, like, that to me is a tangible thing when you look at this year. Are they better in those key situations? How many times, KJ, did I come on the air last year and complain about their execution at the end of the first half? Like week 2 against Seattle, that Miami game I mentioned, it felt like every time, whether it was the last 2 minutes of the first half or the last few minutes of the game, they always failed. Like the Colts with Anthony Richardson had a 19-play drive with a 2-point conversion to beat them at Gillette Stadium on December 1st. Can they win some of those games and those situations?
Probably not.
See that, but
that to me, like, that's, if you're a Patriots fan, you're like, what's something tangible I can take away? Like, May threw an interception in overtime against Tennessee. Does he not do something like that this year? He threw an interception in the end zone up in Buffalo. Does he not do stuff like that? That, like, those to me are tangible things
so
you can take away.
So the distractions. Though, because those would be some of the distractions. Remember when Vrabel, you know, said the comments he made about the fumble that happened in the Commanders preseason game, where he said, "Hey, we should know better than that." As a parent, that sounds very much like we've talked to you about this, but yet you were doing it. Why are we seeing it? And if you see some of those from Drake May, because I think the success with the Patriots really becomes being a very boring offense. Run the ball a lot, minimal, you know, passing doesn't always have to be deep. You know, if you need to scoot for a first down to move the ball, ball possession, time of possession is all going to be key for this team. That is where I would be concerned, where Drake May is like, well, I got to do something. I got to get a highlight.
And I think that's what they got to be careful about. Like, if there's one thing for Drake May that I think you should look for this year, can he limit the turnovers? I mean, the dude had 16 turnovers last year. What did he play, 12 games?
Yeah, like, well, but at the same time, we also knew that he was the only option for success at that position last year, and now there is no other thought. This is like the second year with Mac Jones, right? Oh, there's not going to be a discussion about the quarterback position for 2 or 3 years. So we're at that position again, and if May makes a bunch of mistakes, then, you know, like, it's the reaction that becomes the distraction, where it's kind of like, okay, now we have to have this conversation of, can this guy put 2 and 2 together? And is Josh McDaniels and him potentially ahead? But we'll get into that conversation with McDaniels as well in terms of his perception. But I think the way he does things only helps this team because this team doesn't have any superstars really on it currently. 617-779-7937. It's KJ Lyons. That is correct on WEEI. It's now time to trend with John.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Lyons.
We're back to KJ and Lyons on WEEI.
It's fun. I know he does a really good job of balancing the grind of football with the human element of how difficult this job can be, both from a player's perspective and a coaching perspective. I'm really enjoying his perspective on that and how he keeps it fresh. You know, he'll chase us out of here, you know, when it's time, you know, to get out of here, you know, which I appreciate. He knows how long the season can be and, you know, rest and trying to keep yourself in a healthy place is an important part of it, too.
KJ and Lyons on WEEI, 617-779-7937. We'll get to your calls and texts shortly. That's Josh McDaniels saying, hey, coach, I'm going to run that halfback toss to the left again.
No!
No, I'm kidding. It's interesting, John, from the perspective of Josh McDaniels, because I don't want to say he's failed at head coaching. I don't want to do that to him because he stepped in situations that were kind of failing where his success was going to uplift an already sinking boat, right? Denver was kind of in a fog in those Elway days when he was there. It wasn't really good. Obviously, the Colts had been a mess from leadership all the way down. And then, of course, the Raiders, who historically have been a mess. So it's interesting. Well, it's good that Josh McDaniels can come back here, and I think he offers a level of comfort for Drake May. But I also wonder, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, is this just kind of like the prodigal son that's going to come home and eventually get beat down for just some boring play calling?
I think if he gets beat down for boring play calling, people will be wrong about it because I think, look, you can say he failed in Denver. And look, Denver did win a playoff game the year after he got fired. So, like, you can say he failed there and it didn't go well.
This isn't like college football, right? Because my recruits are still there.
It didn't go. No, but what I'm saying is, no, I'm saying you can say he failed there because someone else came in and won. But I, like, as an offensive coordinator, like, people around here, for some strange reason, like, don't want to give him credit. He's run the Patriots offense for 14 years, and they've had top 10 scoring offenses, 13 of them. And that's with Matt Castle. That's with Mac Jones. That's with the 2016 combination of Garoppolo, Brissett, and, of course, Brady after. Like, he's done it with different quarterbacks here, and he's done it at a high level. So he's, I think part of it, too, and this is like a side topic, I think people would always blame him over the years because it was much easier to blame him than blame Belichick or Brady when things didn't go well. And things rarely went poorly here with those two guys, but in those moments where the offense didn't perform well, it was much easier to blame him than it would be to blame Bill or Brady. And I think people leaned on that, and I think they look at the head coach thing, and I think they look at the Rams year, but if you look at that, if you actually look at that Rams year, you see that was a lot more context to it than people admit. I think he's going to come in, and I think he's going to do a really good job. I think this is a great hire for Drake May. I think it's a great hire for the Patriots offense.
So I'll get to my thoughts on that, because what if that is all being set up to be the diabolical plan as well? When things go wrong, blame McDaniels. 617-779.
That's going to happen. Don't worry,
KJ. 7937. Let's go to the text line. John, you read one, then I might read one.
All right, so there's one here that kind of follows our discussion about how many games they're going to win and what we'd be satisfied with.
You got to say that. You got to say 617-581.
Yeah, yeah, I know how to read the text line. Okay, I've been here like a month. I'm just kidding. 2 years. It's a 207 text here, following up on our discussion. There's no way this team gets anything better than 6 to 8 wins. Trust me, I'd love nothing more for the Pats to beat all expectations. I just don't see it. And it goes along with what we're saying, but I think you would agree, KJ, there is a pretty big difference between 6 and 8. Like, both be losing records, but we're talking about a huge difference if it's 6-11 versus 8-9.
Well, we know what 8-9 looks like, and that was painful, right? 8-9 is when Patricia and Judge were running the offense.
That's the best offense they've had the last 3 years.
So that's why I'm saying, like, how can like 6 or 7 wins be a success when we remember how it felt with Patricia and Judge running the offense and Mac Jones as your quarterback? Like, all the bad things you could potentially have on offense were there and exasperably bad, and that team won 8 games. 9 has to be in it because now you're consistently in the conversation. So, again, in that first break, I mentioned that, look, maybe Josh McDaniels' boredom is what this team needs to be successful. And let's test it out on the schedule, right? McDaniels wants to run the ball. I think it's the strength. It's clearly the strength of the offense. Would you not say that's the case?
I would say especially early in the season, KJ. Yes.
I would say probably all season.
And you might be right, but I think without a doubt this first couple months.
So let's test out the Josh McDaniels boring, quote unquote, I don't think it's boring, I think it's smart, approach to play calling and how it could potentially play out for this season. If he's able to effectively run the ball tomorrow, do they beat the Raiders?
I think that would be a huge part of it. Yeah.
I believe so, too.
Like, we'll get into the game more later. Like, the defense is going to be a big deal. But, yeah, if they run the ball well, if, like, Travion Henderson has a good game, like, yeah, that goes a long way towards winning tomorrow.
Right. So this is kind of an overview. We're not trying to – we'll dive deep into tomorrow's game.
No, I hear what you're saying, though. Like, if they run well tomorrow, that's going to make a big difference.
I'm actually not telling you that. I'm telling our friends who are listening who are in the room with us, right? They're like, oh, he's about to go through the schedule. Or you're going to go – not yet. The Dolphins – they effectively run the ball in Miami. What do you think happens?
I think if they run the ball down there, that's their path to winning.
Boring, but it's a W, right?
Yeah.
The Steelers game. Do you feel like, okay, you might have to do a little bit more because they've got guys who can stop the run and who are very aggressive at defending the pass?
But that's one that, and I think they are going to have to throw more to beat the Steelers, but that's one too, with especially guys like TJ Watt. They're going to have to use a lot of screens, get the running backs involved, something McDaniels does all the and people don't like it all the time. It is something he's good at.
So let's just call it the run game with the passing flair, right? Like, so that, because again, if you're saying, hey, you might have to air it out a little bit, that's when you start looking in the receiver room. You're like, wow, there might roll 4 guys to Diggs and drop back a defensive lineman for the other one. I'm kidding. All right, so the Panthers, you feel like if they effectively run the ball against the Panthers, they win, right?
Yeah. And I think, to be clear, it's not going to be like a run-only first month. Drake May is going to have to make some plays, but I'm with you in that they're going to lean heavily on the run game, and that's their path to winning these games.
Again, my thinking is you've got to be thinking, how does this team get to 9 wins? Somehow, right? You might fail at it, and if you get to 8, at least you had a chance to get that 9th. I don't want to find this team having 3 weeks left with, you know, three, four weeks left, you know, after the bye, and they've got to win three or four games to get to 9 wins. It's something totally different, right? So by the time they get to the Bills game, it's going to be a prime time game. Now, here's what's funny. You remember the last time they beat the Bills?
They threw it 3 times.
What did they do? They ran it 30 straight times.
They're not going to get 50-mile-an-hour wins this time, I don't think.
Well, but you might get 20 consecutive runs just because...
I think you're going to have to throw the ball to win that game.
You'll throw it a little bit.
The Bills are going to score. I think you're going to have to throw the ball to win that game.
But the smart play would be possession, keep the ball out of Josh Allen's hands, because what they want to do is get up and down the field fast against this team. Make them throw the ball so you hold on to it. So right now, if Josh McDaniels can get his running game off in these first 4 weeks, possibly a 3-1 team, possibly just in that first, right? So it's a possibility.
Yeah, that week 2 game in Miami, too, really intrigues me because traditionally, even when the Patriots were good, going down there early in the season, or really going down there at any time, was always difficult. But it feels like you've been following stuff out of Miami, things don't seem like they're going that well in training camp in the preseason for the Dolphins. Maybe the Patriots can catch him down there. And Mike Vrabel knows firsthand how hard it is to play down there in the heat. He's literally done it.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't sleep on the sun play, right? The sun delay that they have, where all the wayside has nothing but sun in their face for the entire
game. Yeah, and I'm trying, like, when they've actually won down there, it was like 0-3 in overtime. 2011 was a Monday night game, so it was a night game. It was early, it was week 1, but it was a night game. So it's obviously been, like, 2019 when that was Antonio Brown's 1 game, you know, 0-7 when the Pats were low. So it's obviously been rare, and when they've done it early in the season, whether it was 19 with Antonio Brown or 11, they've had huge offensive games. And I wonder, can they catch Miami in week 2 and have a big offensive game? Because, again, a lot of years, you look at that and you're like, oh, that'll be a loss early in the year. Because of the way things are going in Miami, that I think it's on the table to win that game.
Well, here's why I say it's important for the run game to be super established in these first 4 to 5 weeks. Because against the Saints, against the Titans, against the Browns, you'd want to be able to see what Drake May can do. Right?
Yeah, you want to be able to open it up there.
You want to be able to open it up. And if the run game hasn't been established, then even that Titans and Browns game can get more interesting than it needs to be. Watch this. If you haven't established the so-called boring Josh McDaniels run. It has to be established if you're going to have any conversation that's going to be more of the reaction of what's going on in the field versus the distraction of what they should be doing or who's not out there or injury bugs. All those are distractions, right? Because what's decided is in a 60-minute game. Everything else is a distraction. What will we be talking about? And I think this is where, let's just say Van Pelt was kept. I'm just going to tickle you. There's no reason. You're like, why would you have kept him? But let's just say he was kept. There may be an inclination to feel like we should open this up more because we know the system. We're together. I'm a burgeoning quarterback. I can get these things done. I want to throw the ball. If you have Josh McDaniels coming in, which you automatically say you've got to defer to this guy, as you mentioned, because he's done it as a winner. He's put yards up in games. He can move the ball, but also the way he gets to moving that ball isn't conducive of a quarterback slinging it all the time. So I think Josh McDaniels is really the perfect, he's really the stopgap, I think, from things being ugly early on.
And I think, too, if you watch them in training camp, and I keep going back to that joint practice against the Commanders, the ball was out quick of May's hands. It was easy. And I don't mean easy in that it was like simplistic and basic, but like McDaniels had guys open. May saw it quickly in rhythm, got the ball there. Like, to me, that was really impressive. And that's also when you've seen the McDaniels offense be successful, whether it was, and even take Brady out of it, like when it was successful with Mac Jones, he was getting rid of the ball pretty quickly, right? Matt Castle could push the ball down the field, and he hit Moss on some deep touchdowns. But he also was able to move around a little bit or get rid of the ball quickly, make some plays. And I think you saw some of that in the joint practice against Washington. So that's why I tend to agree with you that I think it will end up being a really good fit between McDaniels and May. And I think it's going to make a big difference early because you look at the September schedule. Like, I'm not going to sit here and be a Patriots honk and tell you they're going to go 4-0. But there's 3 winnable games, maybe 4 winnable games.
If they establish the run.
On that schedule. And so, like, look, Vegas is probably roster-wise a little bit more talented than the Patriots, especially if Gonzalez is out. But they're not light years better than the Patriots. Like, that's a winnable game. I talked about Miami already. Aaron Rodgers had a decent season statistically last year, but, I mean, the Jets were brutal. Who knows how he's going to be in his 40s there? And I respect Mike Tomlin, but, you know, you don't know how that's going to go. Carolina was one of the few teams in the NFL worse than you last year in Week 4. So there are winnable games early in this schedule. I think if you can not just establish the run, but if you can get these shorter McDaniel-style passes going, and, again, I think that's why a lot of people want these, you know, young, hip, tight pants offensive coordinators. I think McDaniels is a better fit.
Wait,
with
did you
May.
Say tight pants?
Yeah, you know the guys, right? Pause. Like the McDaniel, you know, the Mike McDaniel, the Sean McVay, the Shanahan, all those. You know what I'm talking.
You watch that closely.
You
huh?
see him. And I will say this. I will say this. All right. And I said this a couple weeks ago here with Mego. So if you heard me before, I sound like a broken record. How many of those guys have actually won? Like that, Sean McVay won a Super Bowl. He's been in 2. He's an objectively great coach. Have any of those other guys won a Super Bowl?
Well, here's the crazy thing.
With those offense?
I don't want to get too far off of a tangent, but here's why those guys aren't winning Super Bowls. It's because Andy Reid is going to pass Belichick and win.
Well, that helps too.
Right. Right. So literally, let's just ward off an entire conference. Right. Like, even when I did just kind of like, because I have an uncle that bugs me before the season starts, you know, like, it's kind of the job hazard. Like, when people find out that this is what you do, they automatically go into, you know, like, so, you know, what do you think of the half inch cleat? It's like,
no!
I think about other things.
I just
too.
Say, don't talk to me about work.
Yeah, right. Yeah. There's part of you that's like that. But when I wrote things down, the Chiefs still kept coming out in the equation. The Patriots did too. But so a lot of teams aren't winning because Baltimore and Cincinnati are in the same division and Buffalo can't get over the hump and the Chiefs somehow have this formula. So for these other guys who aren't winning, if you're not Buffalo, right? Like, we don't talk about Buffalo's failure the same way we talk about the Dolphins' failure, even though neither one of them have won it, right? Same thing with Baltimore. A little more critical because, you know, Lamar Jackson's winning MVPs, but you're like, okay, you're the MVP of like a can of tuna. You're not winning anything. So there are a lot of players, there are a lot of teams that are just really not going to get there. I think what you're seeing now is, just bringing this back to the Patriots, can they get back to competency, right? This is, you went from the reason why people watched football more than the Cowboys, right? All those different years, you're thinking like, the Cowboys are still worth more than the Patriots with all this winning and Putin's in the middle. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is an international team. We're now asking for this team to be competent again. And this is, we're not talking about, hey, we've waited 10 years. We're what, 5 years into the malcontent?
Yeah, rebuild of the number three, right?
Like, right. That's,
and it's funny, I don't know if you got a chance to hear Vince Wilfork on the Games with Names pod with Julian Edelman. I think it was last week. And he made a comment that stood out to me. He said, what the Patriots have been the last 2 years are the teams that those guys used to make fun of when they were players, right? All the undisciplined stuff, the stupid turnovers, the weird losses. Like, back when Wilfork and Edelman were here, they would make fun of teams that did that. And for the last 2 years, that's been the Patriots. Like, I mentioned 14 one-possession losses. I mean, think about the Mac Jones interception in Germany. And how about the Jacoby Myers backwards lateral against the Raiders? Like, all these awful, terrible one possession, stupid losses. That's the things people around here, including the players, used to make fun of. So I agree with you. Like, the first bar to clear here is, can they be competent? And I know it's a low bar, but for the last couple of years, I mean, have you watched the Patriots and said, oh yeah, that's a really good operation? Like, things
you
are.
You can liberate, like, me! Embarrass me in front of a reporter!
It's been very hard to wear the gear around the country. Very hard.
I just wear the old Champions gear. Like, yeah,
like I have a jersey. I have a Brady jersey that's a Reebok, so it's 20. It's like a 20-year-old.
Old school.
Right.
Good for you.
Right. I bought it around the time.
They changed in 2012. That's when it changed to Nike, was the 2012 season. So it would have been before
I got married. So, like, I remember buying in Atlanta. So if I'm still somewhere around Atlanta, it's going to be like around 06, 07. Still in great shape. But when you think about it, it's like, okay, what is the jersey that you would actively wear anywhere around the country to this day to say, I'm a huge Patriots fan since Brady's been issued a jersey? Who would it be?
It'd still be him.
Yeah. So we're now really in the competency era. Like, if you want people, because keep in mind, people are like, oh, you hear them talk about with NBA. All those guys played in like uncomfortable shoes and they worked as salesmen as one day. People are waiting to say that about the Patriots. Oh, man, look how slow those guys were. I mean, they were, you're celebrating, you ran a 4.5. Guys run 4.21s now. They were slow and everything. So if the competency doesn't come back, like, now with this team, if there's no competency that comes back with this team now, the history of this team is going to be looked at as some people look at the Steelers winning all those Super Bowls years ago. Oh, I wasn't alive then. Oh, I can't even remember that. Because most people, when you first, let's see, first Super Bowl, if you were born the year the Patriots won the first Super Bowl, you were 25 now?
Yeah, 24, 25, right?
Yeah, 24, yeah. 25, right? Yeah. So if you're in 10 years, when you're 40, and if the Patriots have not come back to any type of competency and they're just mediocre, and I mean mediocre in the sense of, okay, maybe they make it to a couple of wild card games, but you're not really seeing them play.
You know who
the
you're describing,
January.
KJ? It's the, like, Cowboys, the rest of now. Right,
yeah,
everyone
right,
talks,
like,
about the Super Bowls they won in the 90s.
Right.
Like, that was 30 years ago, right?
Because who is Kraft kind of like mirror himself in terms of the recognition that he would want from pro football? Who is the name that pops up?
It's Jerry Jones.
So
why would Jerry Jones made the Hall of Fame and not me, and I've won 6 Super Bowls, blah, blah, blah. And that was in the ESPN article about it.
Right, yeah. So why not say, hey, because I have such a loyal fan base, right? Like, people are not going to give up. I remember what it was like when people were doing other things than watching a Patriots game. Like, you know, like watching Patriots game, like, okay, you've heard me talk about like the discounted stuff down at the Braintree Mall. My girlfriend was working there. Like, she'd bring home loads of stuff. Like, the Patriots schedule, like 4 games in, it would be discounted T-shirts and everything because you knew what was happening. And so now you're never going to have that dispassionate fan about this team ever again. And what could potentially be dangerous, I know we're up against the break here and our boss is watching this, but it's compelling, is this team may get designed to be just like the Cowboys, where interesting enough in the fall, compelling in the winter, lets you down by time it's the playoffs, and you'll be good to say, well, I mean, it was a better season than last year. So if you start that number at, that's why I'm saying you need to start this number at 9 or 10 about this team. If you're serious about getting good again seriously, then saying, you know, 6 or 7 would be better than last year. You know what happens when you win 7 games in a season? You get a harder schedule the next year. It's never going to be easier than the Saints, Titans, Browns, in the Panthers.
In a row.
Right.
Yeah, Saints, Titans, Browns in a row.
Right. So if you can't capitalize on it now and be a 10-win team, this has to be a 9-10-win team for me really to take any progress seriously. 617-779-7937. KJ and Lyons. Professor Lyons next here on WEEI.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah! When a brother is rocking Grateful Dead on his show, that means he just had some very nice baked goods. I'm totally kidding. It's KJ and Lyons back together again. First time in months. In months, I think, John.
I was thinking back. I think the last time might have been around Super Bowl weekend.
Yeah,
or I think right after. It was
You want to talk about talent. In the last 49 minutes, and if you missed any of it, the Odyssey app is free. Just type in WEEI. And, of course, remember, you can listen on your Alexa device. Say, hey, Alexa, play Boston Sports Radio WEEI. And it'll bring you right here to KJ Lyons. Has not missed a beat. You know what I said, John?
Pay the man.
Ken, you can kill the music. This is kind of fun, right? Because our boss is running our show, but because he's talked for 3 hours, we can tell him, hey, don't join in on the show.
You can tell him that. I'm not going to tell him.
There's no fear. There's no fear on this show. None. Flame growing. All right, we're like 3 minutes away from Professor Lyons, it's probably been since January since I played this. You could hit me with a snafu of
Joe Biden was still president. It's been a while.
You said Joe Biden was president? No, totally kidding.
Both, maybe.
That's a dream, right? Like, boys, he's awake. Nap time. You might have 6 months of debauchery up your sleeve because for those who have been followers of KJ and Lyons, it's very much like collecting Grateful Dead covers, you know, shows over the years. I'm like a 750 average on this. It was about 750,
yeah, you
right?
Did you did do well, yes.
Right, and keep in mind, Professor Lyons literally is a master's in education. So this is no joking thing, and KJ, who's very ill-prepared, well, at least it sounds that way over the air. At least our boss now sees our note sheet, so he knows he's not winging it. Yeah, exactly. Pour a cold one for some education here. This is just gold right here in 51 minutes, John. We have not lost a step. One bit.
Yeah. Give us some Marconi.
Okay. Text, and then I got to ask and get your thoughts, and maybe Ken chimes in on this, about what I just saw at a ballpark here the last couple of days. What you got?
So a couple quick ones here. One just came in. First one says that they disagree with you about McDaniels. It's a 508 texter that he did fail massively in Denver and in Oakland. The players went to the owner and demanded that he be fired. In Oakland, I'm sure they're talking about Vegas. Screwed the Colts over. So they disagree with you. They think McDaniels was a major failure in those stops.
Yeah, but look at the ownership. Like the Denver, when he's in Denver, that's no longer the ownership, right? They're no longer the owners.
Well, that guy passed away, right?
Kroenke. No, Boley. Okay, so yeah. Different leadership.
Is it the same? I couldn't even tell you.
Kroenke was somewhere in the mix of that. So they have different ownership than when he was there. The Raiders have the same ownership, but that's always been a problem. And then the Colts were an issue at the top. Let's just call it what it is. I don't want to make light of it, but there were issues at the top. So sometimes you can't say, hey, you're a failure if your leaderships are failures as well. Right. If we're
the Denver one was a failure. I think Vegas should have given him a little more time. Because you notice they hired Antonio Pierce in the interim, and they ended up firing him anyway.
Well, again, we'll look at the debauchery they went through with your guy in Minnesota, the defensive coordinator with
Flores.
It was Flores, right? Yeah. So Flores would become part of that mess that would come later. If there was one thing I would say is maybe McDaniels got caught up in a little bit in the shine when he was in Denver and went 6-0, had beat Belichick. It was on Good Morning America and proceeded to stink virtually the rest of the head coaching career. Right. So it wasn't a total failure in Denver because at first he got them on a roll. He beat the Patriots and everything. Well, didn't they went to the playoffs that first year, did they not? Yeah, I think he took them to the playoffs.
Are you talking about
McDaniels in Denver?
No, I don't think they. I'm trying
it's
to think
the
back.
First year.
Yeah, because
or the
I know they won
year.
A playoff game the year after he
it
left.
It had to be the second year because that
no,
second,
the second year,
year
he got fired in 2010 because then so, right in 2011 that's when they won the playoff game with Tebow. And
yeah.
came here and got smoked.
Okay, so that's right. So he's gone as Tebow's throwing the ball. Yeah, so look, Josh McDaniels overall failure? Nah. Failing situations? Yeah. Yeah. Those were not winnable situations for him. Especially once he got to the Colts situation. Remember when Andrew Luck left, he was just like, well, I'm not gonna go. Yeah.
No, Luck was there though when he turned. That was a whole weird situation. I think
That was ownership, right? That's a whole situation.
Well, and I also think Kraft was afraid Belichick was going to leave and wanted to keep Josh around.
Yeah,
if you remember, that was like right after that Eagles Malcolm Butler Super Bowl, right? So I think there was something to that.
Kraft came right there for Belichick. Sit down and do this interview for Apple TV.
Yeah, I think there was something like that. Quick text, 413 agrees with you about the win total thing, says he has a son who's 11, and that son, to them, the Patriots being champions is just like past history.
So, yeah, kind of it's not even in their lexicon. So once they get into their 20s, if you haven't done it, they'll be like, what are you talking about, Dad? Okay, before we get into Professor Lyons, have you heard or seen what happened at the Phillies game with the woman who seems to have caught the ball? Here's the audio. Yeah, so the good thing is it didn't come to fisticuffs. But there is a debate now going on across social media. Which side are you on? Some people are saying, she's a Karen. She's complaining. He gave the ball to the kid. Now, I personally think that the kid was the foil for an ill attempt to get a ball. Like, how many? So I guess we have to decide how many sections can you run across to go get a ball?
It's not like he ripped it out of her hand, though. Like,
but she just,
I mean?
But she
like,
just said you took it out of my hand.
I don't know. The video
which is the rule.
It didn't look like.
Well,
we
really couldn't see her hands. But if she tells him you ripped it out of my hands, that's an ass move right there. If they people like that, you burn in hell for it's women and children first, not like me stealing from the woman to give to my child. Yeah. You heard at the very beginning, you heard some beeping happen, right? That's because somebody was calling the guy a name because he came running across section. So I think part of the distraction of why people are seeing it mostly one-sided, kind of 80% on the guy side, is you have to look at the constraints of your own park. So let's just say this guy ran across the seats, the monster seats. Okay, let's say he went the same distance from the edge of the monster seats damn near all the way down to the pole and snatch the ball from somebody. Do we have the same conversation?
Maybe. Yeah, we might. I don't know.
You see what I'm saying?
It depends on the context. Because, like, she ran over there and, like, basically took it from him and his kid, too. Like, if he didn't have kids with him, I think we'd be having a different conversation.
But the kid is the foil, right? Like, you know the kid is the foil. Okay, so have you ever caught a game baseball? Have you?
So it's funny you bring that up. I never have, and I've been to dozens of games, and I will tell you this right now. If I caught a ball at a game, I don't think I would give it to a kid the first time. I would want to keep it.
Okay, so I'll tell you what.
And I know that's selfish, but.
We'll do Professor Lyons next break, and then we'll get to Tom Carroll coming up at 1:20. So hang out. KJ and Lyons continues. We'll get to more of your calls and texts. 617-779-7937. Yeah, that's the Karen right there. Oh, you. Yeah, that dude ran too far. KJ and Lyons continues next on WEEI.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.